It's the John and Gordy Show.
Do you know what this means?
Wouldn't you like to know, weather boy?
You're pretty high and far out, aren't you? What kind of kick are you on, son?
No good bastard. Your show sucks.
What made me think this was a good day to stop drinking?
Buddy, you want coffee?
Coffee.
Black coffee.
Coffee.
They warned us about people like you!
What a load of crap.
Thank you, sir. May I have another?
We'll do it live.
And that's the way it is.
Only on Mad Radio 92.7 WMDX. Take it away, boys.
All right.
Take it away.
The baton is in our hands.
That's right.
Let's run with it.
Good morning, John and Gordy. Yeah. 92.7 WMDX.
We've got a contest,
Tuesday.
Don't we?
Yes, we do. It's time to get ready for our Sconny Summer Text to Win contest.
It. Yes.
Actually, yeah, we're going to do it right now. It happens during specific hours of the day, 7 a.m., 9 a.m., 11 a.m., 1, 3, 5, and 7 p.m. And during those hours, we announce a word, a keyword, and you text that word into us on your Civic Media app. This is a statewide contest, so you can enter not only here, but all other radio stations in the Civic Media group. As we go through the day, go through the week, we have during those hours, we give away Wisconsin Dells summer prize packages, and we have a daily winner also for a pair of Milwaukee Brewer club level seats, and then the grand prize winner at the end of the contest. We have two grand prize winners for those beautiful staycations. A Door County stay at the Ridges Inn and Suite. That's on the table. Nice, also, yeah. Lake Geneva stay at Harbor Shores or the Fort Atkinson Cottage on the Lake, which includes a pontoon boat. You don't get to keep the boat. You just
you
get
don't.
To use the boat,
yeah.
Okay? Just,
pontoons are the
I
best
I want to clear up any confusion.
Ever.
You don't get a boat.
We're going to talk about the pontoon boats that they discovered in the lake.
They didn't discover pontoon boats. Here's the word for this hour. Are you ready for this? To text it in,
I'm
get that
set.
Civic Media
jot
app.
It down if
you're
you can.
Not eligible, John. The word for this hour, the 7 a.m. hour, is democracy. Okay,
right.
Democracy. Remember democracy?
Democracy, yes.
Something
we're about to lose that. I think.
Well, let's hope we don't.
All right.
Democracy is the text to win word of this hour. The key word, democracy.
Right. Democracy.
Okay, so text that in, and people are already texting in even as we speak. Okay.
All right.
Congratulations in advance. If you're a winner. And if you're not, keep trying. Okay?
Okay.
All right.
That sounds fantastic.
Okay. It's time to welcome in our guest this hour. Amy Roseborough is here. She's a state archaeologist. And welcome, Amy. Good to have you here.
Well, thank you. Glad to be here.
Thanks for coming in. So,
I was thinking
what's going on here?
Raiders of the Lost Ark would have been a great...
A theme?
Theme
oh.
Some music to play?
Oh, you're right. I should have pulled it off.
Wow, we can still look for it. All right.
Oh.
Amy, welcome once again. We want to talk about some of these discoveries that have been made recently in Lake Mendota. They keep finding these canoes, right?
Yeah, canoes everywhere.
How many canoes have they found so far?
Up to around 10 right now.
Yeah. And have you been actually involved in these searches yourself, or are you just are you part of the committee or something that the canoe committee?
I'm the land-based partner in this.
Okay.
So we have a team of divers that work with the Wisconsin Historical Society. Usually they're working on shipwrecks out in the Great Lakes.
Yeah.
And Tamara Thompson, one of our divers, just happened to be kind of swimming around in the lake one day, looked down and was hovering right over the end of a canoe.
Wow.
And so that's what got us all started. It's 100% chance.
And how long ago was that?
That was about 3 years ago.
Okay. So when they find these, then what's the next step? So he just saw something, and then what?
First step was to get a radiocarbon date, because we're not sure, okay, is this something that's 100 years old? And we thought if we were really, really lucky, that date might be 300 years old. And instead, it came out at 1,200 years old.
Wow.
And blew us away a little bit.
Yeah.
And then it turned into, well, we've got this ancient canoe, it's exposed, it might be starting to degrade, why don't we re-raise it up? And so it was brought out of the water and taken to our conservation facility downtown, and the goal was to get it stabilized, because wood that's that old, when it's brought out of the water, will fall into sawdust in short order if it's not properly
preserved.
So
how do you stabilize something like that?
A chemical called PEG, or polyethylene glycol. It's a non-toxic wax. If you've ever eaten a Skittle, You have eaten peg?
Yes, those are awful.
It turned out to be a major component in vaccines. And if you think about what was happening 3 years ago, you realize that we had a little supply issue with that. But it came in just a few months ago, actually. So they're now being conserved. So we've kept it in water until then to keep it preserved. Mm-hmm. And we thought, all right, that's it. You know, one canoe.
Yeah. Should be happy with that.
Yeah, we'll never be that lucky again. Yeah. And then the following summer, Tammy's out messing around in the lake again.
Oh, Tammy.
Yeah. And
can't stop her.
Text message comes through and says, guess what? I just found another one. And same process with, this one will be about the same age as the first one. No, number two was 3,000 years old.
Wow.
And like, okay.
That's ridiculous. The Earth wasn't even around then.
First one was 1,200.
1,200, yep.
Second one, 3,000.
Christian nationalists 3, are listening to this and they're freaking out.
Okay. And then what happened?
And then, well, we, when we were excavating the second one, the divers down there kind of brushing, set them away, because, again, the thought was, well, this is the oldest one ever found in the Great Lakes. We obviously have to raise this one up and make sure it's conserved. Right. When they were doing that, they started noticing other wood down there, and that got us thinking about some pieces we had brought up with the first one that we thought had fallen off the degraded end. And you know, like, maybe we should check those out just a little bit more. And so we got more samples, did more radiocarbon dating, and suddenly we didn't have two canoes. We had 10.
Wow.
And so some of them are still in fragments on the lake bottom. Some of them are fragments that we brought up thinking that they were belonging to canoe number one or canoe number two. And the oldest of the dates came out at just over 4,500 years old.
That's amazing.
That's the beginning of time, according to the Bible. Now, here's the thing. I want to know, where are they located? Is it near the shore? Were they stored on the shore and ended up, you know, being lost in the water sometime? What, or the lakes raised up? What happened? How did they get to where they were?
Well, exactly right. They were being stored on the shore. Mm-hmm. The little trick here is that the shore was not where the shore is today. So at the point that these canoes were being put in place, the shore was much, much lower, further out. So you have to go a couple hundred feet out. So if anybody's fished on Lake Mendota, they talk about the wall. So there's a drop-off where all the fish hang out. And that's an ancient shoreline.
Oh.
So people were probably putting the canoes in the water over winter to keep them from freezing and cracking and destroying themselves. Mm-hmm. So they'd cache them deliberately. And then over time, you know, one canoe gets left behind, then another, then another, then another. Oh. And they're all kind of building up on one little stretch of the lakeshore.
I see. Talking with Amy Roseborough, she's a state archaeologist. So when they find these canoes, well, what kind of wood are they using? Can you tell that?
That's
local
good question.
Wood. Local wood. And that's one of the things that actually has us the most excited, is because you can see the environmental history of Madison through the canoes. The oldest ones are elm, which is very, very difficult wood to work, but it's the tree you would go for if the environment is very open, if you had an oak savanna environment, because elm will grow very straight in those conditions. And then you've got a nice long segment of trunk to make a canoe. And then it switches to cottonwood and ash. And then over to oak, first white oak, and then red oak. So what you're seeing is the prairie and savanna giving way to a more closed canopy environment around the lake.
Mm-hmm.
And that matches pollen that had been pulled out of the lake by the university years ago. So we're seeing...
They pulled pollen out of the lake?
Yes. That little sediment cores, and then somebody has to go through all that mud and tease out the pollen grains. It's a job, but...
Somebody's got to do it. Yeah. Going through mud.
So you have these 10 canoes now.
Right? Mm-hmm.
What happens, where are they now, and what's happening? Are they still researching these canoes and kind of
So the ones that have been left on the lake bottom are going to stay there.
Okay.
I guess once you get to a certain age, the wood isn't even really wood anymore. Mm-hmm. We barely brought up that 3,000-year-old canoe. It fractured into about 30 pieces.
Wow.
Just from moving that short distance. And we'll be able to put it back. We've got a jigsaw puzzle box lid for that one. So we'll get it back together.
Okay. And then will you put it on display somewhere?
The canoes that were raised, the goal is to put them in our brand new history center that's due to open, I believe, 2027 here. So
where is that going to be?
Right at the corner of the square where our museum is now. So across from the Veterans Museum,
right down
State Street and the Capitol Square.
All right.
Okay. And it's going to be a spectacular facility.
Yeah.
So now the search continues for more. So you've found 10. How many more could be there? You have no idea, really.
You know, when I close my eyes, sometimes I think that what we may have is just a bathtub ring of canoes all around Lake Mendota.
Oh, sure.
And Monona and Wingra and Kiganza. And you know, the indigenous presence in Wisconsin goes back, you know, since time immemorial, you know, 14,000 years documented through archaeology, most likely longer than that. So that's a lot of time to lose a lot of canoes in.
Isn't there, you know, scientific equipment now that is capable of finding these shapes instead of actually visualizing them, seeing them, discovering them?
It's like super scuba diving. Underwater cameras?
Yeah. Well, like I don't know if it's so much that, or but just, it's some kind of radar device, some way of mapping.
We're checking that out right now, as a matter of fact. Oh. So we attempted some ground penetrating radar on the lake ice winter before last. You know, it was a horribly, horribly cold day. Just dragging this equipment back and forth, we had William Quackenbush. He's the Tribal Historic Preservation Officer for the Hodnuck Nation. Larry Plasinski, he's the equivalent position for Bad River Chippewa. We've been in contact with the Menominee. So we've got tribal partners that are coming down to lend their equipment and expertise. And we got some data out of it. We thought, all right, we'll try it again last winter. No ice.
Right.
Or at least nothing I want to walk on with expensive equipment. So we are attempting a new technique. We'll be out there in September with ground penetrating radar. We're going to put...
radar.
Yeah, we're going to put the radar unit in a canoe to find canoes.
An old canoe.
Okay.
Well, so Sam has a styrofoam sailboat that
he could help you out.
I don't know if I would. I don't know if I would trust that to have thousands of dollars of equipment just sitting in.
I mean, did they find out what other artifacts have they found besides canoes? I mean, did they find anything else down there?
The first one had a set of seven stone net weights. Still inside it.
What?
Stone net weight. So they would be used to hold down the bottom of a gill net. Okay. And then there would have been floats, so wood or gourd floats holding it up. So we're pretty sure that was a fishing canoe because it had fishing gear in it. Huh. I was hoping for fish hooks. Didn't spot anything like that. So.
Well, you know, we've all seen the Indiana Jones movies. Are any of these booby-trapped?
Not so far.
Okay.
Not so far. But, you know, we always keep that in mind.
Fascinating.
All right. Well, thanks. So
as the search continues, how can people find out more about these canoes? Do you have any information online about the search or how this is going?
Sure. If you just Google it, honestly, you're going to come up with a billion recorded videos and lectures that we've given on them.
Well, so, Amy, thank you so much for being with us.
Yeah.
Amy Roseborough, state archaeologist. This is fascinating. And good luck with your continued search.
Yes. Yeah. If you find a you know, Lake Mendota monster, let us know as well. We're very interested
in that.
You're
the first call.
Okay.
Thank you, Amy.
Thank you.
John and Gordy show continues. We'll check in now with Brittany Merlot on our weather coming up.
What's new with the weather? What's new? What's with the temperature now? What's the
low? I'm glad we we should have asked them to make it sound modern.
No, it's perfect just
it's
the way
perfect,
it is.
Yeah, very retro.
John and Gordy Singers welcoming in Brittany Merlot. Brittany, good to have you with us.
Hey. Thank you. I felt like I needed an umbrella to do a little dance with that song. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly.
And we want to let everybody know Brittany's going to join us every morning now at this time.
Is that true?
Not just once a week, right? Every day, Monday through Friday.
Did we corner into this, you know? It's free.
Oh, no. I love this, you guys. This is great. Thank you so much.
Yeah, we love talking to you in the morning, so. Now you said you did a little research on the cicada problem that we
we haven't really had that many cicadas in Wisconsin.
I haven't heard any
we?
This summer at all.
I've heard that they were over in the Lake Geneva area, and that was the last that I had heard about it, at least in Wisconsin. So, So what you guys are talking about? They call it like this sex-crazed zombie STD, basically.
That's right, a zombie.
Okay, wait a minute.
Zombie cicadas.
What? Right. Zombie cicadas?
Yes. That's a movie
Pete Schwab is like, I got to write this down.
This is a great,
great movie idea. Okay, tell us about zombie cicadas.
Okay. So I guess what they're getting is basically a fungus from the soil, and it could be while they're coming out of the ground. It could be while they're in their or even while they're above ground, they're dragging their bellies around and they're grabbing this fungus. So if you think about it, fungus, right, is like they're basically on shrooms in a sense. Like they're losing their mind.
Yeah.
Wow.
This is such a crazy conversation.
The cicadas on shrooms.
Wow.
I love it.
That's frightening and also fascinating. So why haven't these been in Wisconsin? I mean, they've happened in northern Illinois.
Hey, we're talking about the disease here, and they lose their sex parts, the worst part, these zombies.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's so crazy. So it's like this fungus plugs their abdomen, and then they, lose their sex parts, and then they start to change their voices and the way they act because it's like making them sound smaller and more female, and then their wings flap like females, like you were saying. And so, I don't know,
it's
but
crazy,
they're attracting both sexes. They're spreading this STD, and that's why it's coming north, because it's from the south. This was like a Tennessee problem, down south problem.
Oh, Tennessee.
That's now made its way to Champaign.
Man, I'll tell you.
Wow. Okay.
They need to make a movie.
They do.
I would think
watch
that. So,
yeah, I'd watch that too. All right.
Zombie cicadas.
Yeah. Well, now let's get to the weather for today, you know.
Who cares? Because, who cares about the weather?
I mean, it's beautiful. All right. Well, we can talk more cicadas. You have more questions?
Okay. Putting me on the spot.
Okay.
But let's talk weather.
Yeah. It's beautiful. It's beautiful here this morning. How is it in Wausau?
It's really pretty here, too. The sun is out. It's looking great, but it's not going to stay that way all day.
Wow, no. What's going to happen now?
I know. Well, the weather that calms and quiets the cicadas. Shut them up.
Oh, no kidding.
We've got clouds headed our way, right? And maybe some stormy weather in the
horizon. So today, mainly just clouds increasing for you this afternoon. Maybe a scattered shower or two from about noon to three or so. Nothing crazy today, not even heavy rainfall.
Great.
But as we go through tomorrow, the heat humidity starts to build just a little bit more.
Dew points.
And then we do have chances. Never those are going to be wild.
Don't forget about the dew points.
Yeah. Dew points getting the mid-60s. Even higher.
Yeah.
According to I'm preoccupied with dew points. You know, they don't give it enough in the weather forecast, you know, and it makes me angry.
And they never talk about the jet stream anymore.
No,
either.
They don't.
Why
they don't
is
do that?
That
either.
What's wrong? Yeah. Is the jet stream just not a factor anymore? They don't have time for that map?
Yeah, we don't have time for it. Nope.
Or the vortex, whatever.
You do
that
TV
is.
Weather occasionally, right? What TV station do you work for?
Not necessarily anywhere anymore, but I was, of course, up north. I used to do the Fox Valley. I'm in the Wausau area now, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. I always wonder about, the TV aspect of things with the weather.
What do you mean?
The weather, the graphics just keep getting more and more involved and crazy.
I love those.
I know. They're beautiful, but, and they have different ways of explaining every single thing about the weather. There's always coming up with a new graphic. Yes. Now the one that I always see in the morning is bus stop weather. They have all these little bus stops driving around, and the kids jumping off the bus. And bus stop weather
because
the kids are heading out to the bus stop. They need to know what to wear. Yeah,
Gordy, when you first started doing TV weather, did they even have green screens at that point, or was
Yes,
so you're not that old.
They had green screens and they had blue screens, but most of them are green now. Yeah, they had blue screens, but then they realized, people that wear blue clothing would disappear on the front of the screen.
That happened for one of my school pictures once, actually.
Is that right?
I wore a green shirt.
No.
I was just a floating head in the school computer. For some reason, it showed up fine, like when the pictures were printed, but on a computer, I was just a floating head.
That's actually, I did that bit. I had a green cloak that I wore, and for Halloween, I was just a head floating around
on
the weather map.
I missed that.
Yeah.
Yep.
Fun stuff.
I had done the same thing. I put, tape as if I was a stick figure on my green outfit, so it looked like a stick figure with my head, and then my hands were there. So.
That's an even better idea.
You should do that all the time.
Yeah, I like that. Fun stuff.
Well, when I was in weather, we had magnets, and we used to
move. You were never a weather man. What are you talking about?
Move the clouds around with magnets.
Yeah, in the old days.
I would love to go that way.
In the really old days of TV, and I've seen this way before me, my time. In the 50s, they used to use blackboards. No kidding. And they would just use chalk and blackboards to put the numbers, the figures on, you know, the high temperature, low temperature, all that stuff.
When I was a young kid in Milwaukee, they had puppets on their weather forecasts.
Yeah. Albert the Alley Cat.
Albert the Alley Cat.
Oh, you should Google Albert the Alley Cat, Milwaukee TV.
Yes.
And I don't know what station. I think Tom Skilling actually got Albert the Alley Cat fired.
Yes, he didn't like it.
He didn't like it when he was in Milwaukee.
To take weather seriously.
You remember Tom Skilling. Yeah.
Oh, yes, I do. Yeah.
Just retired from WGN after many, many years. Yeah. Yeah, he was a Milwaukee weatherman. He actually started in Madison at WKOW.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. No, he's actually from the area that I'm from, the suburb of Chicago, and I interned with him
when
I was in college and stuff.
Kidding.
Yeah, so.
What a great guy.
Me and Tom Skilling, we go way back.
Yeah. And he just retired recently, a couple of months ago, a few months ago.
Good for him.
Gave him a big send-off.
Yes.
Well, Brittany.
Well deserved.
Yes. Well, anyway, that's our weather talk for this morning.
I think you know we've gotten to the bottom of the zombie cicadas as well, and
thank
I'm glad
goodness
we
for that.
You know, close the book on that.
Yeah,
Brittany, thank
done.
You for joining us. Yeah. We hope you have a good day. Enjoy the weather where you are.
Yes,
and, you too.
May good weather always
we'll
be your friend.
And we'll talk to you from the Short Stack Eatery tomorrow as we eat breakfast, and you know you can join us.
Yeah, one of these days we should have you come down and you know have breakfast with us.
Yeah, we're in the area.
I would love to. I would love to. Right. Yes, let's do that. Let's plan it.
That's Brittany Merlot, our meteorologist here for Civic Media. Thanks for joining us, Brittany. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye now. 29 past the hour. Pete Schwabe is in the green room. He is coming up next. Mr. Nightlight on the John and Gordy Show.
Oh, yes.
Is the John and Gordy Show.
This portion of our program is brought to you by Worms. Yes, when looking for something to wriggle helplessly on the sidewalk after a heavy rainstorm, more homeowners select Worms than any other invertebrate. Remember, they're boneless, they're easy to care for, and they grow new bodies when you cut them in half. They're wacky, wonderful Worms. Ask for them by name.
So that's it, right?
Worms.
Yeah. To be a part of that neighborhood, you have to have a nice stock of Worms to fit in.
It's our new sponsor, Worms.
That's fantastic. Mad Radio, WMDX, the John and Gordy Extravaganza Show. And we are so happy to have Pete Schwabe in the studio. Nightlight, it's right here this morning, so early.
Well, we listen to the rerun.
The replay.
The replay. The Thank rebroad. You. Yeah. We listen to it from, what, four to six or
yes.
something?
Yeah. Yeah. On our way in, we always check it out, and we heard of it, you know, just a few, you know, this and that. But, you know, for everybody that doesn't know, give us a little background on, you know, your stand-up comedy, and you've done directing and screenwriting, right?
Yeah.
Well, let's go back right to the
beginning.
Where were you born,
Phil
Pete?
St. Joseph's Hospital, Chicago, Illinois.
Okay.
I grew up in Chicago, moved to Marinette when I was 12. I grew up a couple miles west of Wrigley Field on Irving Park Road, off Irving Park Road.
Yeah.
Moved to Marinette. It's a little bit of culture shock for a youth of 12, but made lifelong friends there and went back to Chicago and started doing stand-up when I was in college at DePaul University and, you know, did stand-up and then went out to L.A. and got lucky and sold some stuff and did a little bit of acting but primarily writing and thought I could retire and I was wrong. So I do nails now and a little bit of radio on the side.
Okay. Well, you know, being up there in Marinette, do you think you created a little bit of that humor that you have now from your experiences up there? You know, Midwesterners are known for being fairly cynical.
I would say so, yeah. And it's funny you say that because I ask people that on Nightlight. Like when I have comics on, did the Midwest or Wisconsin shape your sense of humor? I think it absolutely did. Like there's just a quirkiness here.
Yeah.
Like, and I notice it like when I'm in Chicago, it's just skeptic you know, it's like, ah, you're full of BS. There's nothing funny about it. Exactly. Here, it's like they just kind of look at you, like nod their head. And you get, I don't know. It is different a little bit, yeah. But I think it absolutely shaped my my sense of humor for sure. Yeah.
So talk about being a stand-up all those years. I mean, it's hard to break in. You know, every stand-up tries to go to open mics, and they think, you know, I'll just get a few minutes together, give it a shot. But really, getting up on stage the very first time, it's got to be a frightening experience. And how did you get into it?
Makes it better, doesn't it?
I think so. Yeah, I mean, the first time I was on stage was at DePaul. It was kind of a friendly crowd.
Yeah.
And then I did a contest in Chicago, and kind of still a friendly crowd. I had a bunch of people from my college come out and support mm-hmm. me, and that was fun. And I thought, oh, I can do this. And then I started hitting open mics, and I was like, ooh.
A little tougher, a little tougher than you imagined.
But I did get lucky in that I started kind of during the comedy boom, so there was a lot of work right away. And I started working. I mean, I thought I was okay, but I started working right away. There were so many TV shows. I got on a lot of those, and I toured all over, and really was able to do it full time within about 6 months, which is crazy.
What time span are you talking about with the comedy boom?
What years?
Well, yeah. I started in 1990,
okay,
or towards the end of 89, and then probably I kind of stopped doing it full time in 96 or 97 when I moved to LA. I would still do it occasionally. I still do it now occasionally, but
really?
I just didn't want to do the road. You know, when you live in Los Angeles and all your work is in the Midwest, it's like, okay, honey, here you go. You stay in the apartment. I'm going to go on the road for 13 weeks. You know, it's just, so I just sort of did it locally and had a writing partner who I started working with named Greg Liana, who started the Meet the Parents franchise. Mm-hmm. And he and I got lucky and sold some stuff. And so I kind of went that route for a while. But that's a weird thing, too, because not everything you write sells, and you get cocky and then something doesn't happen. And get a couple kids all of a sudden, and you know,
that's not great.
But it was good. I liked my time in LA and loved my time doing stand up and digging it now.
No, wait, you mentioned that your one of your kids just graduated, right? From at the university here.
My son Joe graduated from UW Madison in 2023.
All right, So what is he getting into?
The same thing.
Stand up, really?
Yeah,
that's
Has
right.
Has he been right below us here, comedy on stage?
I think he's going to be very soon. He just moved to Madison for the summer from Milwaukee. He's doing comedy sports. He's doing stand up. He's got like 3 completed screenplays. He's like way ahead of where I was.
Wow,
but
good for him.
He's a lot smarter than me, too. Wow. Like, part of me, you know how it is with your kids. It's like, you're just like, just go be a systems analyst or something I don't know anything about. You know, you don't have to do this. Yeah. I had to do this. Yeah. I was a solid C student. Yeah. You know, I had nothing going on.
Yeah.
But, you know, whatever. I'm supportive for the most part. And, you know.
Now, you have a daughter, too, don't you?
I do.
Yeah. What's she up to? What's her story?
She's all about musical theater. And basically, I moved my kids as far away from the entertainment business as I could.
And it didn't work.
It didn't work. And both are finding their way into that. So, whatever. It's fun.
Well, I got this, you know, I'm kind of a relative to a comedian. Can we play this cut, that little interview that John and Gordy did?
Way back. This goes
cut
way
58.
Back. What year is this, do you think?
90s? When we did our show together in 91 or 2.
Okay.
Something like
I love
that.
It. That's awesome.
Yeah. So let's check this out. This is, we called my cousin.
Jeff Cesario coming to the phone momentarily, ladies and gentlemen.
The big star.
Please stand by.
First cousin of mine and...
Hey, John.
So, Jeff, do you have any, like, childhood memories of John Peterson?
I was going to say, you know, it's been a long time since we've talked. Maybe since we were 5 or 6. Maybe 8.
Yeah, let's see him.
And I've avoided calling you this long because I don't want to be one of your relatives who, you know, come up out of nowhere, riding your coattails, trying to get, you know, a little connection here and there, like in a Chicago radio. You know the big wigs now, you know, get me on the air, get me on the air, Jeff. No, I'm not going to be one of those kind of relatives.
No, and you shouldn't.
Okay, good. thank you.
So, John, let's see, probably the last time we talked, that would be a pretty close estimate. I'd say... probably 20 years.
Yeah.
It's a close-knit family, Gordy.
There you go.
I can see that,
That's all we have. A little segment.
Are you really his cousin?
Yeah.
Love Jeff. He was at my show about 2 months ago, maybe.
Oh.
No kidding.
And a really good guy.
Did you mention John?
No, where was your show?
On Nightlight in Green Bay.
Oh, he was on your show.
Yeah, and if I had known that, I would have brought that up.
That would have been fantastic because we have not talked.
Since that interview, probably.
From that interview. That was the last time we've talked. And, you know, we're not a close family. We have never, ever contacted each other. And I'm thinking, wow. Here we are in these, you know, twilight years. It'd be nice to at least touch base once.
Oh, Jeff was kind of totally into, like, sports comedy, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was a sports comedian. Like, yeah.
And he's a huge Badger fan.
Okay.
He had some handle on Twitter or something that was like Badger Boy or something.
Well, his brother, Greg, was part of the band here at Wisconsin.
Oh, nice.
Yeah,
okay.
I can't remember too much about it. Again, we are not a close family.
It's not too late, John.
Keep up to date.
Yeah.
Maybe you could have a little reunion on Pete's show, you know?
That would be fantastic.
That would be hilarious. Yes. We have to do that.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, he's from here, but he started in Minneapolis. There's a few guys like that in Wisconsin, but they actually went to Minneapolis to start as opposed to like Milwaukee or whatever, even Chicago. Mm. But yeah, he's a very funny guy. Emmy-winning writer, wrote for the Dennis Miller Show, and very funny guy.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, he's great. Very good guy.
Yeah, last time I saw him at Milwaukee, there was a comedy club right off Brady Street in Humboldt. I can't remember. I don't know if it's there anymore. But
Comedy Cafe.
Yeah.
It was a great room. That was one of my favorite rooms in the whole country to work. Oh, and they gave me like 4 weeks a year, and I loved – I mean, I only lived in Chicago. Technically, I could have commuted, but I had so much fun there. I stayed at the Haunted Comedy Condo right across the street.
Okay,
Haunted?
And it was supposedly haunted. And there are a lot of stories. And what would happen is the comedians would go complain to the owner. Hey, I got up in the middle of the night. All the drawers were stacked in the kitchen table. And they're just like nodding. Really? That's weird. And they've heard this a lot.
Yeah.
But they never wanted to tell people because they were getting a good deal on rent, you know.
Right.
So they risk our lives.
That's great.
But that was a great club.
You know? But, you know, the thing with Jeff, his dad was very outgoing and very funny.
Huh.
And he would poke the kids, and he would really, really have fun with them and joke with them. So I can see why he turned out the way he did. Very outgoing father.
Yeah.
Guido.
Oh, that's interesting.
Guido Cicero.
Nice. Yeah.
Really.
Talking with Pete Schwabe, host of Nightlight on Civic Media Radio Network every evening. And what's the latest on Nightlight? What do you
have
coming up tonight?
Actor from Mad Men and Whose Line Is It Anyway? Joel Murray will be on tonight. Joel is from the famous Murray clan of show business, Bill and Brian.
Bill Murray.
Yeah, and
Brian
Joel
Doyle,
is made a mark of his own. He's a very successful actor. He's directed, and he's just a great guy. So he'll be on tonight. And then Civic Media's own, Stuart J. Waddles, was on last week.
Okay.
We had all these topics we were going to get to, and we didn't get to two of them that are very popular in Wisconsin, Summerfest.
Yeah.
And fibs. So we're going to talk about that tonight, too.
Well, you know, the fib thing kind of died out because it used to be kind of fed by Milwaukee and Chicago radio announcers.
Oh, is that how it
started? That's where the battle began.
That's kind of where it started,
yeah.
See, I always thought, like, now I'm a transplant, so when I'm in Chicago now, though, I'm a cheesehead. Everyone's like, oh, yeah, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And then when I'm here, I'm a fib. So I am a man without a home, and it's caused a lot of trauma. But I do think...
Obviously.
I do think...
It's a sad situation. But
I found radio very late in life.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that should tell you something. But, they...
What?
Here, listen.
What do we got here?
Oh, I like that.
John prepared this special for you.
Yes.
God darn it, don't.
Nice.
Nice. Nice production work there.
Oh, thank you.
I like that.
We do what we can.
You know, we had to the cheddar curtain. We always joked about the cheddar curtain down there and people crossing that thing and coming up here, polluting our lakes.
Speeding. Yeah.
Speeding.
Yeah. Although we're just as bad at that now.
But you know what? That's great, though. I like the speeding. I wanted to drive fast on our highways in this state. So thank goodness Chicago influenced a little bit. Yeah. Now we're driving fast.
You should come up to the Marinette area because people will go. They do it just the opposite. Like, the speed limit's 45. I'm pretty sure I could go 35 in the left lane and not get pulled over.
Oh, no.
It's awful.
Yeah. Seriously,
Oh, my gosh.
No kidding.
In a small town, you can have your head up your butt because people are nice and they don't beep and lay on the horn. Like, when you're in a city, you kind of have to be on your toes and live in society and be part of the give and take of humanity. In a small town, You do whatever you want. Yeah. It's like, oh, that's Earl. He's fine. That's just how he drives. Yeah. He weaves a little bit. Yeah. He goes very slow.
We're all used to it. Yeah, it's no problem.
No, you see, in northern Wisconsin, no one wants to get there early.
Right. Well, that's what I think. Are they just driving around? Like, they don't seem to have a...
There you go. There's
no destination. Are you not going anywhere?
You nailed it. You got it.
Most of us have a place to be.
Oh, man. You know, I heard a guest that you had who did the movie Lake Michigan Monster.
Oh, yeah.
And it was funny because you asked him a question. Now, people have to see this movie. It is one of the most fantastic, surreal movies. It's like, you know, German noir.
Right.
Whatever it is. And it's just fantastic. But you asked him, how did you get that feel for that film, right?
Yeah.
And how do you get that look? And he said, well, you know, it looked pretty chintzy. And then when we put this cover over it, this black and white old film cover, it looked good and artsy. And I just thought, wow, what a great admission.
Yeah, and you watch their stuff and you're like, I have no idea how they're doing this.
Yeah,
I'm not a techno film guy.
It's amazing, isn't it?
It's unbelievable, and it's so unique and different and weird and fun.
Yeah,
yeah, I cannot wait to see what they do next. It's Mike Cheslick and Rylan Brixen Tews. Really funny guys. Yeah,
the lead in that is one of the
Ryland.
Yeah,
yeah,
he's fantastic.
Yes.
He really is, and he's in Hundreds of Beavers. Is that
Hundreds of Beavers? He's great physical comedy.
Have you seen that?
I have.
Okay,
I haven't seen that yet. Is that where can you find Hundreds of Beavers?
You can stream that.
But you have to pay. You have to pay for that.
We still talking about movies?
I think so. I'm not sure.
Lake Michigan Monsters on Prime now, free.
Is that okay?
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
And you can stream the Beavers film, too, Hundreds of Beavers. They're both great. I recommend. They're more fun with a group.
Yeah.
Some cocktails and have people over because it's so crazy and fun.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
Really
but the Lake Michigan Monster itself was just a fantastic concept.
Yeah.
The creature was just amazing.
And how they did it.
How they did it is amazing.
It starts, you think he's in this deep water swimming. You see this crazy creature, and he stands up, and he's in knee-high water. It's like, great.
Pete, stay with us here.
Yeah.
And the John and Gordy Experience, the family show, will continue in just a moment with Pete Schwab, a host of Nightlife, right here on the Civic Media Network. Starring Pete Schwab right now, host of Nightlight.
Yes, Nightlight.
Not Nightlife, as I may have mistakenly said. Nightlight.
It doesn't matter.
Hey, what's the deal with Conrad anyway? Where'd you find this guy?
You know,
your sidekick.
He was pretty banged up when I found him at a shelter.
I always wonder about the second banana on these shows. I have a complex about that.
He's had a problem getting Pete to watch some of the science fiction movies. Star Wars, right?
I've seen those, but it's good. He likes different stuff that I like.
Superhero movies.
He's very funny.
The Marvel movies. You weren't necessarily into those.
I watched them.
Oh, you did? Okay.
I have seen most of them, but I can't remember which one is which. It's like, honest to God, I can't remember. It's like the Star Wars movies. My son will talk about them, and he'll say something about the Clone Wars, and I'm like, was that the third one? He says, Dad, that's the TV show. Come on.
They
kind of get mad about it.
Yeah. John's a big Marvel fan.
I am in Star Wars, and I like the prequels, and my sons hate them. My sons are Gen Zers in their 20s, and they're looking at color grading.
Right.
They live in John's basement.
Watching things differently than you did. Yeah.
They see these things in a different way than I do. And I'm saying, I used to watch Stop Action Monsters, and, I waited for the last 5 minutes in horror movies to see the monster. So I have a different way of looking at these movies, and they don't. And they expect great quality all the way through.
Yeah.
And
you know what's interesting? We watched Alien and Aliens just 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
My whole family watched the first one. Mm. And I'm kind of with the Gen Zers on this one. It takes forever for something to happen. And then in Aliens...
I tried to watch it a couple of months ago, and I was like, when is this thing really going to kick in?
And even in the second one, nothing happens for like an hour.
There you
go. It's all set up, and it's all... And I'm like, oh, God. And then the payoff is okay, but it's like...
Right.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think they've gotten better that way. You know, now when you sell a script, it's like if it's a mystery, they want to see somebody die by page five, at least set the tone.
Well, you start with somebody die.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Right. Yeah.
And they show you the monsters right away. And one of the great movies, I think, is Predator. You know, it's all the way through.
Great movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. We wanted to talk about movie theaters, right?
Yeah, movie theaters. You were talking about the oldest movie theaters in the country.
Yeah, right?
Or in the world. Were you? In the world, yes.
It's the old. I don't know if it was like. It wasn't like the first one ever made, but Terry Bell found this theater in Washington County, Iowa, I think, that's been operating since 1897.
Wow.
And is still operating.
Yeah.
Like,
Longest running,
or oldest running, however you want to say it. They still show movies, first run movies. Wow. It's this little cool old theater. There were pictures of it, and it was beautiful. I mean,
wow.
Yeah, I love a good old
theater. They still get first run movies?
I think so.
Wow, that's amazing, right?
Correctly. I mean, it's Iowa, so it's probably 3 years behind. They're just getting like iRobot right now. So to them, it's a first run. But
it's pretty good, I guess. Yeah, not bad. Did you hear us? We were talking to Brittany Merlot, our weather person.
Oh, I love Brittany, yeah.
We were talking about the zombie cicadas. And that is, I mean, really, seriously, you can come up with a script for that.
Wow.
Yeah. Isn't that a great idea?
Freak me.
Yes, they got a fungus, and they're becoming female.
Some of their parts are falling off.
Transgender.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's an amazing thing. So you might want to look into it. I see screenplay. I see big hit movie.
I see a big, one of the cicadas just being an anomaly and becoming 18 feet tall and killing people and snapping their necks.
There you go.
You still write and come up with different pitch ideas and work with some people in the business
from
time to time?
Yeah, I'm working on a half-hour show right now with a producer who's great, but very busy, and he's hard to get on the phone. But we've been working on this script for a couple of years, and we'll see what happens with that. I'm trying to get an independent film going.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, it's a hustle, and it's just like doing Nightlight has been really fun because I can talk about movies, I can talk about comedy, music. We had a great musician in here last night named Katie Scullin.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. She's excellent.
She's so good. And, if I don't have to direct the film, that's fine. I still wrote it, and somebody else can do it. If I can keep doing my show, that would be fun. But
Katie brought up a really good point. You asked her a question about production value in her music.
Yeah.
And she really nailed it. A lot of these musicians, they discover all these ways to layer the music, and they layer too much, and it becomes overproduced. And that's been one of my biggest complaints about Wisconsin musicians is overdoing the production value.
Okay.
Yeah. And in fact, Gordy was in a band, and
I've been in a few bands.
And we've got our theme song.
Yeah, you don't have to play it.
No, we should play our theme song.
You gotta hear it. Come on.
It's not overproduced.
Okay.
It's wonderfully done. Let's play that.
All right.
Here we go.
We use this every morning to start the show.
Right.
At least once or twice. Now this was recorded, I think, about 1980. So
really
that far back. What was this originally for?
This was actually for produced this before our cable show.
Yes.
So, let's see. Yeah, it was about 1980 that I did it. I can't remember exactly why I did that particular instrumental. Yeah.
And it lives here.
It lives
That's
on.
That's so cool.
Playing? I do play. Yeah. Play guitar. Nice. Yeah. Play occasionally, get up and I do some blues jams around the area every once in a while.
Oh,
go play at a
cool
little tiny wine bar up in Baraboo, Konamichi Wine Bar, once in a while. Do a solo thing there.
I love your whole story, how you guys had this past.
It's
so great.
Yeah.
I know the cable access show,
fun
the
stuff.
The movies. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the thing is, I used to review movies for my radio show and then for television at Fox 47, and it just you know, got better and better. But the whole thing was I had a deal with the Marcus Theaters to go in and watch the movies for free.
Oh, that's nice.
And but
and
the other,
review them.
But yeah. The other time, the artsy movies drove me crazy because I had to go to the movie theaters like, you know, the Orpheum or the Strand, and they were the worst theaters ever. You know, the worst seats you could ever imagine.
And bad arts, sound.
And artsy, bad, really bad sound. And artsy movies that you just, you know, you just want to rip your hair out. Watching.
I had a movie at the Orpheum in the film festival in 2005 called The Godfather of Green Bay.
Oh, yeah.
And we packed the place. It was like 14. It might be maybe the most attended film still to this day, but the sound was so bad.
Yes. Yeah.
It was like watching a silent film in that you had to just, okay, well, that line was like late.
Oh, no.
As a director, I was just beside myself.
Turn your hair
and
out.
That's what it was like at these two theaters. Had to review the movies, had to see them. You know, I wanted to give them good reviews, but it's hard to sit through.
Yeah. I think it was good.
Yeah, I think it was.
Hey, guys, we are all out of time. Pete Schwabe.
What?
From Nightlight.
Can you believe it? It just
thanks for joining us.
Fast.
Hey, come back again sometime, all right?
Anytime.
All right.
This is fun. Thank you.
That's going to do it for John and Gordy for this Tuesday. Tomorrow we'll be at Short Stack Eatery with our special guest, Paula Severson from Dane by Local. Yeah. That's it for us. Have a great day.
All right. See you later now.
So bye-bye.
Have a good day.